What Chefs Want story is incredibly unique. The owner, Ron Turnier, met with a bunch of chefs in Louisville back in the early 2000s and asked them one simple question: what do you want? And the chefs, they responded emphatically: we want deliveries on Sunday. We want to be able to split any item that you sell. We want a frictionless experience where we feel like we're being served. And so you know what he did? Something crazy. He did just that. So What Chefs Want is not only a company that's delivering fresh produce, fresh seafood, fresh custom-cut meats, specialty items, dairy, gourmet, all of that 7 days a week, they also offer 24/7 customer support. You want to call, you want to text, you want to email, you can talk to somebody 24/7. Get your delivery 7 days a week and an amazing selection of products. That is What Chefs Want. So if you ever wonder, why do they call it that? That's your reason. Check them out at whatchefswant.com.
Welcome to Nashville Restaurant Radio, the tastiest hour of talk in Music City. Now here's your host, Brandon Still.
Hello, Music City, and welcome to Nashville Restaurant Radio. My name is Brandon Still, and I am your host. Our co-host Caroline Galzin will be with us shortly. We are powered by Gordon Food Service. Want to always say thank you to Gordon Food Service for keeping this train on the tracks. These guys are amazing. They're doing amazing things. If you need a broadline provider, you got to call Gordon Food Service because they're the best. I'm not kidding. I love them to death. They're good people. We are talking today with Alex Ballou. Alex was the former owner of Dallas and Jane in Murfreesboro, and he just won Hell's Kitchen. Season 21 of Hell's Kitchen winner Alex Ballou is going to join us in just a moment. This interview is so much fun. We ask all the things. Hopefully, we ask all the questions that you're thinking watching the show. Like, is it really like that? How long is the show? When did you film it? How long does it take to film it? Were there people you knew were going to leave immediately? Do you really not like this person? Do you really not like that person? He answers all the questions. I thought that he was about as genuine and real as you can get in a guest who is in that scenario. I don't think one time he said, oh, I can't answer that. I can't talk about that. He just went in and said it all. So I'm really excited about this conversation, and I learned a lot, and I really enjoyed talking with him. We interviewed Alex in April of 2020, right as the pandemic was starting. And if you hear this and you're like, oh, wow, I want to go back and listen to that episode, I think that you should. It's a great episode to learn a little bit more about him. Or stop right now and go back and listen to that episode and then come back and listen to this episode. That'll be really cool. I hope that you guys enjoy your weekend. Wonderful weather this weekend. Man, I am ready for the spring to really just kick in. I don't need any more freezing weather. This was exactly what I needed. Went to dinner at Henrietta Red the other night, and it was absolutely amazing. Big shout out to Julia Sullivan and her team over at Strategic Hospitality. It was just a beautiful meal. There, it's really, really good. I still don't like oysters. I tried them again for the 725th time. Wife loved them. That's not my jam. I'm sorry. I'll try them every time. I don't know. Maybe one time I'll eat an oyster. I'm like, holy shit, that's the oyster I need. But it didn't work again this time. Went and saw John Mayer this weekend. That was a lot of fun. So I got a date night in and got to go out and spend some time with the wife, and we had a blast. So I know you were wondering. I know you needed to know that, but I thought I would share that just to say thank you to the folks over at Henrietta Red for doing such an amazing job. Speaking of amazing jobs, I do want to tell you real fast about my buddy Jonathan Ho. Jonathan is over at Village Real Estate. And I just want to tell you, if you are somebody out there and your dream is to own a home, that this is your time, guys. I mean, I know interest rates are high, this and this. If you're afraid, if you don't know how the home buying process works, this is what you need to do. You need to figure it out, because this is where you're going to be able to help build wealth. Paying money and rent every month is just throwing it away. It's staying alive. Spending money on a mortgage is building wealth for your future, and it's putting roots down, and it's, and you can do it. Like, you can do it. It is amazing. I went through a long conversation with Jonathan, just said, what do you do? How do you do it? And he just answered so many questions, because I haven't bought a house in several years, and as I'm talking about what he does, God, the guy was sharp. And just, I really appreciated him taking the time. And I spoke with Amanda Gardner. She is over at Foundation Mortgage. Just so amazing. So this is somebody you should call right now. If you have even thought about buying a house and you don't have a realtor, John Ho, his number is 615-483-0315. Tell me, hey, look, I was listening to Nash Restaurant Radio. I've always wanted to buy a house. I have no idea where to begin or what to do. Talk to him. He'll help. Step one, step two, ask you some questions. If you can't buy a house, he'll tell you you can't buy a house. If you can buy a house, he'll say, I can get you a house. And then start looking and take the next step of your life. And then call me and say, Brandon, I heard you talk about this on the show, and now I own a home, and I'm so happy that I listened to Nash Restaurant Radio. That's what I really want to have happen. And Amanda Gardner I spoke to her this weekend too, and she's so helpful. If you need to get financing, they have ways to figure it out to get you financing. They can make it happen. So there's some amazing things going on. Give Amanda a call also. If you're already in the steps and you just need somebody to help finance your house, Amanda Gardner is the person. She is with Foundation Mortgage, and her cell number is 865-230-1031. You can call her today. You can call her today and say, hey, look, I found a house. I need to get a loan. Can you help me? She'll make it happen. So these two are working together for the hospitality community to make this happen. So excited to be working with them. Go get your house. Go do it. Buy a house, damn it. This is the time to do it. Refinance. Rates are high. Go refinance later. But like, get the house. So anyway, love them. Love this interview with Alex Ballou. Cannot wait to get it out there. And I don't have to wait any longer, because it is coming right now. So let's start this thing off. I didn't do a lot of...
Brandon, do your intro so I can just jump
right
in.
I'm on a roll. Music City.
That comes later, but yeah, that's a thing.
Oh, shit. I ruined the podcast already.
I love it. Super excited today.
I'm going to get sued. I'm going
to
go
to welcome back to the show, Alex Ballou. Alex was the former owner of Dallas and Jane in Murfreesboro, and he Made South Meals.
Yep.
The last thing I remember you really doing when I was talking to you, and
blocked that from my memory.
Then he disappeared for a little while and he reemerged on Hell's Kitchen, and he is the winner of season 21 for Hell's Kitchen. Alex Ballou, welcome back to Nashville Restaurant Radio.
Thank you.
And congrats.
Hold your applause. Thanks. Thank you.
So exciting. Wait.
Oh, God. Alex Ballou. Thank you. There he is.
Stops. God. Yeah, it's weird. It's life is very. I need to quit saying it because I need to get used to it, I guess. Maybe it might be short lived, but while it's short lived, I can get used to it.
Alex, how long ago did filming wrap?
13 months ago.
Oh, wow. It's been that long.
Yeah, it's holy strange. Cow. It's like I had a baby over a year ago, but people are just now like, hey, congrats on your baby. I'm like, oh, you mean my 1 year old?
That's crazy. Right.
How hard was it to not tell people?
It was hard. It was harder for my kids. They really wanted to tell people because they knew I won. And so I had to bribe my 5-year-old with prison, that I would go to prison. I was like, do you love your daddy? He's like,
But I mean, you do have to sign a contingency, like $1 million NDA,
five,
right?
5 million.
Five, yeah. Wow.
Not including legal fees. So if anything got out, $5 million. What's crazy is, so the whole show actually leaked in Asia a month or two before the finale aired in America. So yeah. ITV sold a couple thousand hours of television to Netflix in Asia in September. I guess they got their timeline wrong, and it leaked in Asia. And you know how Netflix does things. They drop whole seasons at once.
Yeah.
Versus Hulu, episode by episode. So it dropped in Asia the whole season. And someone found out, so all these people started changing their VPN settings to like South Korea, Malaysia, Thailand, and so everybody started logging onto Netflix and watching. Oh, no. So I woke up one Friday morning to 100 different Instagram tags of me walking through the door and like, your biggest fan in the Philippines. And I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Oh, no.
And so after, like, I emailed Fox and I was like, hey, not sure if you've seen this, but the whole continent of Asia has now seen the show. There's Reddit threads about who won. So it was all out there about 5 weeks before it actually aired.
Were you freaking out that somebody found out and it was because of you?
A lot of people found out. I was actually at the gym that morning and two of my friends sent me a text. They were like, hey, congrats. I was like, for what?
I think I sent you a text and I said congrats, but that was just like because 100% me watching the show as a person who works in this industry and who's a leader and who hires leaders, I'm looking at the entire crowd. I'm watching you and I go, if I was doing this show to hire my next executive chef, there was no offense to any of the other contestants. There's some amazing other contestants.
For sure.
But really it was like, well, how would you not choose Alex? I mean, there's no, your composure throughout the entire thing, you had the pass to, and you're like, nope, I'll stay and clean, I'll shell English peas for 7 hours.
That's brutal.
Versus taking this from somebody else. Like, you stayed with your team. You did all of the things that leaders would do while everybody else is being catty. There's this guy, AB, who's just like, holy shit, man. Like, stop. And then there's the other guy, Billy's who you know I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Blonde-headed guy
who still hates me.
Does he really?
Yeah, he'll post photos from he got eliminated on like day 7. He'll still post photos on his Instagram page and he'll tag everybody but me on the show. I'm like, I feel like someone's missing from this.
Was it the comment about his
Darth Vader CPAP machine? He's like, bro, that really hurts my feelings, bro. And I'm just like, man, I can't. I'm sorry.
If you watch the last few episodes, you missed this guy. His whole verbiage of how he spoke was so like, I was baffled by it. I'm just like, what? I don't understand this, bro. I don't get why you guys talking to me this way. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Like, I didn't understand it.
He was like, he reminded me of like Tony Soprano's cousin who was a veterinarian, but also killed people on the weekends. That was kind of like Billy's vibe. He had this like New York style vibe to him, but he also lived in Florida. Now he's back in New York. Look, Billy honestly is a great guy. He really is. And he can cook, but he's a very big personality. And within the constraints of that competition, we were already sleep deprived, no phones, no family, no comfort, sleeping on a twin size bed with no air conditioning. And Billy was strapped into his CPAP machine. I was like, this is just, it's a lot to take in.
And it was like night one.
Yeah.
That was the first night. Like, how was your night? That was on all the promos.
So night one, they didn't actually air this, which they should have because it was hilarious. Night one, he and another guy both plugged their CPAP. It's like 2:30 in the morning when we finally get to sleep. They both plugged their CPAP machines into the outlet. And within 10 minutes, the breaker trips. And so they start choking because the CPAP's not feeding them oxygen. Oh, but they've entered the nether realm of sleep at this point. Because apparently once you strap in, you're gone. You're obliterate. Like, he put it on and he was asleep. And so he starts.
And I'm
like, what's happening? And I look up and he's like.
Is he dying?
And he's ripping his mask off and he's like, bro, they're trying to fucking kill me, bro. And he just starts running through the dorms. And he's like, I need an extension cord. And it was and everybody was like, what is happening? No, none of us know each other.
Oh my God.
This guy's just causing this.
This guy's running around in his tank top and his boxers screaming about they're trying to kill me. It's now 3 a.m. We're all hot. We don't know each other. There's 5 of us to a room. 18 strangers, and there's this crazy man running around screaming about people trying to kill him.
Well, I thought it was crazy because he would blame everybody else. It was almost like, if you screw up, just raise your hand and go, yeah, chef, I'll get better. Thank you for teaching, which is what you did.
Yeah.
And this guy every time was like, bro, they were doing this to me. It was your fault. And it's like, well, you clearly cooked the dish. You undercooked the dish. Bro, but I didn't turn on the stove. It's not my pan. It's like, just own it and move forward, man.
Bro is definitely his favorite word.
Oh my, 100%. It was crazy. And I'm just watching this going, do you think this is the actions of an executive chef of a Hell's Kitchen in Atlanta? Like this.
Oh man, he was so
wild. If you're going for that job, start acting like that's the job you, like, just do it. And he just was
I can imagine off. Him with his own show, though. I really can.
Oh, is there inside knowledge? Is that going
to
happen?
No, I don't know. I don't. We don't talk. He despises me to this day.
Maybe he'll make it on Kitchen Nightmares.
Maybe. He is running a restaurant in New York right now. I can't remember what it's called.
Well,
he's doing his thing.
Doing his thing. So how long did the entire season take to shoot?
Active shooting was 18 or 19 days.
Oh, that's quick.
Yeah.
Okay, so you weren't like gone from your family for like 6 weeks or something.
It was like 5 weeks because they quarantined us in a hotel for 15 days. Before we started shooting.
In a nice hotel?
It was the Motel 6.
It was a hotel with like a little kitchenette in it. But,
oh, okay.
But the kitchenette, you couldn't really use it. All the pans were warped and like you couldn't actually cook anything. And so you only got to leave your room potentially 20 minutes a day.
Wow.
And it was supervised. If you wanted to go outside, you were masked and face shielded. And they basically babysat you for 20 minutes while you walked around the square. It was intense. Like, I was washing my clothes in my shower. I had to buy butcher twine off of Shipt. And then I ran the butcher twine from my window to my kitchen cabinets to use as a clothes dryer.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was pretty crazy. It was and all we had was...
Sexy.
Like Netflix, YouTube, and HBO.
That's it?
That's it.
Oh, brother. I mean, I had COVID recently and was quarantined in my home. I'm like, I need way more options than that.
Yeah, I watched all of Succession. I watched all of Yellow Jackets. Mm. I watched some good TV.
I mean, good choices.
Yeah, and then I YouTube a lot, like how to make Michelin star dishes. It's like just try to absorb as much knowledge. Because I'd been only meal prepping for a year and a half at this point. So even the stuff, you know, cooking, it's muscle memory a lot of times. And so I wasn't making sauces and gastriques and purees and cooking duck. And I hadn't exercised any of those muscles in like a year and a half. So I was like, oh God, Gordon's going to have me, you know, try to make a beef Wellington. I'm like, what is beef Wellington?
There were moments like that, right?
It's tricky. Like, you know, I know when you're sitting at home watching it, with your hand in a bag of Doritos, you're like, these morons can't cook scallops. But it's really complicated.
Well, that's one thing you can do very well.
I can cook scallops.
I have seen you cook scallops, and you're the best. I don't eat scallops, but I will eat Alex's scallops.
Thanks.
These are the best scallop cookers I've ever met in my life.
Okay, so
there you go. There's a little love.
Appreciate it.
I have a question about cooking scallops.
Yeah.
And anybody who knows me knows that I am a scholar of the reality television arts, and I have watched a lot of Hell's Kitchen both this season and previous seasons, and, you know, my husband's a chef. We watch it together, and the number one question that we have about this show is, why do they give you a nonstick pan to sear scallops in?
Why do they give you nonstick?
Why are all the pans nonstick? You can't... Why are you searing scallops in a nonstick pan? Why don't you have a...
I mean, that's all I use is nonstick to cook scallops.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And now with HexClad, which is what we used all season on our season, it's like a hybrid mix between a cast iron and a nonstick.
Uh-huh.
So you get amazing sears. The scallops don't stick. They can flip really easily. None of those proteins bind to the pan.
Interesting.
So you get a really nice, beautiful golden sear, but the scallops can still move around.
Interesting. Well, I guess it's just that's a type of pan I'm not familiar with then.
Yeah, yeah.
Non-stick's you've partnered with HexClad now, haven't you?
I have. I'm an ambassador, I guess is the word.
Okay.
They're great. They really are. They're a phenomenal company. They're great people own it and run it. And, you know, the product is... really, really good. Really good.
Hmm.
I guess probably the number one question you get is, what's it like working with Gordon?
That's absolutely terrible. No, I'm just kidding. He's Gordon honestly is, once you get past the intimidation factor, he's a big man. He's my height.
Is he really?
Is he really?
He's 6'4". He's built like a brick shit house. I mean, the dude is jacked.
He did used to be a soccer player, like somewhat professionally.
He's done like, isn't there triathlons?
He does triathlons, yeah, Ironmans. I mean, he's very into being physically fit. And so you're like, hey, chef, good God, you're strong. And he's just like, what are you doing touching me? It's like, I won't do it. I won't do it again. Sorry.
I was shaking your hand, sir. That's a general thing that we do in this country to say hello.
He, you know, he lost his first restaurant, and he does everything that he does to, he really wants to help people become the best versions of themselves. That's his whole goal. He wants people to become better. Kitchen nightmares, he would get so upset because he did not understand how people were doing this to themselves. People were becoming their own worst enemies, letting food rot, and then they're like, why is my restaurant failing? And you're like, have you looked around? And he just genuinely cares so much, and that's why the temper flares. And on Hell's Kitchen, you know, the things that you don't see would be the three times he comes over to your station to show you how to properly cook the halibut, the salmon, the scallops, and then you keep sending them up raw or overcooked.
So he personally is coming over and showing you sets. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed to
and
hear that.
Very calm at first. He's like, I mean, it's obviously a very fast-paced environment. Dinner service is very, very quick. When he fires something, he wants it sold in 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's quick. But he'll come over and be like, do it like this, give it some love like this, 1, 2, 3, like this, and then sell it.
Hmm.
And then the third time you send up chicken with like a bullseye pink in the middle of it, he's like, what are you doing? And that's
a pretty good impression.
That's when the chicken literally flies across the
kitchen. if you watch too, like the BBC, the original Kitchen Nightmares, he has a completely different demeanor than, like, you know, obviously there's some hamming it up, I think, for American audiences. Because we love that. We love to see people get screamed at.
I also think he's toned it down and made it a little bit more palatable for, obviously, we've changed as a society in the last 20 years. And so it's a little bit harder to be as hard. He's been called out by some pretty prominent culinary figures in the last 2 or 3 years. I've seen specifically on some posts on Instagram where people have just been like, that's not the way you treat people. How dare you treat people like that? And so I do think he's, and even on Hell's Kitchen threads on Reddit, you can see people are like, I miss the old days where he would just dog cuss someone. But I don't think he'd get away with that anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that the culture has shifted. And I also think that it's a show that's been on for such a long time that you do have to switch it up. You have to change some things because you can't just watch the same thing over and over. You know, people get bored.
And I think that over the course of I'm just a circle.
You're just a circle now.
I'm a circle.
Your camera's turned off for some reason.
That's
sorry.
Okay. I do think that over the course of the seasons, I think he's found more talent than more drama.
Yeah.
One thing that we were constantly told while we were filming was that we weren't as bickery, as dramatic, as immature as some of the other seasons had been. They really had to dig in us to get us to just talk any shit about each other. They'd be like, man, weren't you really mad at Billy today? And I was like, I mean, not really. He's okay. And they're like, but you were mad. I'm like, no, I wasn't. Quit trying to get me to talk shit. Like, it's just, we're just having a good time. It's, you know, at the end of the day, no matter how bad it's been, I'm sorting peppercorns for Gordon Ramsay.
Mm-hmm.
It could be worse.
Yeah.
I was messing with the camera over here. Do you have your own producer, essentially?
There's about 8 or 9 on the show. So each person, they kind of go back and forth. You kind of get switched up because you do a lot of confessionals. A lot of confessionals. They'll pull you before you go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. They'll pull you out of a challenge. They'll pull you out of a reward. They'll pull you out of a punishment right before you're going to bed. I mean, they had me do the Darth Vader CPAP machine that I've become a meme about, and that was like night one. They filmed that after the finale.
Really?
Like, I was covered with champagne, and they were like, okay, change clothes. We need to get some more footage from day one. I'm like, Jesus, I'm so tired. Day one.
What is a typical day? Like, what is this shooting schedule? Because you have said a couple of times you guys aren't going to bed until like 2:30 in the morning. What then what is your call time the next morning?
So it's a strange situation. I mean, we got COVID tested around 7:30 in the morning. I was usually waking up at like 5:30 in the morning, cleaning up the dorms, making coffee, trying to get in the shower, just kind of get myself mentally prepared. And then we would usually start shooting around 8:30 in the morning. And then we would do a challenge. It would be over around 11:30 or noon, reward or punishment for hours. and then we would go into dinner service. And
so,
And then dinner service would be 3 hours, and then elimination. We'd have to, you know, have our little conversations. We'd go into elimination. After that, someone went home, and then we were doing confessionals for the next 3 to 4 hours.
Wow. So when you guys are getting rewards, even though it's supposed to be like, here's this cool, amazing thing you get to do, are you ever just like, can I just go back to sleep for a little bit instead of going to ride
I didn't get any rewards. I did the most punishments.
Well, fair enough.
It was pretty terrible, but.
We're going to take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
When you hear that sound, it's probably too late. You need a guy. I want to be your guy. I'm Kevin with Corson Fire and Security, and I'm a restaurant territory account manager. Do you know who's doing your inspections at your restaurant? Please reach out to me at 615-974-2932, and I'll be glad to come out and take a quick look and look at all your fire safety inspection needs. If you're building a new restaurant, we can help with that too, as far as kitchen suppression, fire extinguishers, emergency lights. We do it all. One stop, one shop. Call Kevin at 615-974-2932. Let me be your guy, Nashville.
Hey, this is Jason Ellis with Nashville Super Source. We're so proud to be a sponsor for Nashville Restaurant Radio. We would love the opportunity to discuss your chemical and dish machine program with you. If you have any needs or any questions about your current program, opening a new restaurant, or just need a double set of eyes on that, we'd love the opportunity to help you with that. My number is 770-337-1143. We don't do any contracts, no minimums, weekly service to make sure that all your equipment is functioning properly. Make sure you have everything that you need. Again, my name is Jason Ellis, 770-337-1143.
Can I just go back to sleep for a little bit instead of going to ride whatever?
I didn't get any rewards. I did the most punishments.
Well, fair enough.
It was pretty terrible. But, yeah, I mean, I it was so strange. I was so sleep-deprived, but I was never – I was exhausted, but I wasn't sleepy.
Do you think they intentionally sleep-deprive you?
It's got to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean –
I could never do it. That would be the number one reason I couldn't do
it. It's called Hell's Kitchen for a reason.
Yeah.
I know that Next Level Chef wasn't like that. Like, they got their phones. They got their own a hotel room every night. Hell's Kitchen is like, it's boot camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough.
And the having to sleep. So you really have to sleep in the room with everybody.
Oh, yeah. And there's 2 toilets for 18 people.
Uh-uh. No. I feel like we're all adults. We deserve rooms and bathrooms. Like, I won't even share an Airbnb with friends if I don't have like an ensuite bathroom. So yeah, it really is hell to me.
It's a lot. 5 to a bedroom. Your closet is, you know, this big that can just fit 5 shirts in it. They give you a new shirt every day if you make it. And it's, you know, everybody has like a little cubby in the bathroom for their toiletries. And like after the blind taste test, our showers were just covered with marinara, Parmesan, and Alfredo sauce. It was everywhere.
Wow. Do you get a sense every day who's going home? I mean, you're working, you know, how confident were you every time you get into that situation or towards the end of the show, you're like, I'm not going home. When you're in that room discussing who's going to leave who you have to nominate,
yeah.
I don't think anybody ever said your name. And it was probably episode 7 or so that you could see AB and this other dude,
Billy,
start plotting. They both said, okay, Alex is our competition.
Yeah.
They both kind of got together and said, this is the dude we got a gun for. And it's like,
I don't have a big enough gun.
Well, they didn't. But it was like you started to realize throughout the show, oh, this guy's the front runner.
Yeah.
Who's going home next? Did you feel that? You're like, oh, they're probably leaving. It's between these three people. It's not me.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely sense it when we were going into the deliberations who was probably going to go home. My name never got brought up. I was never put up for elimination. So that was super amazing to go through that. But I'll be honest, like every day there was stress. Every day there was like, today could be it. Because you're only as good as your last moment. And you mess up. You could have 6 amazing days in a row. You tank dinner service that night, you're going home. Because you're the reason dinner service tanked. It would not matter if, you know, well, Alex sent up 14 raw steaks tonight. Well, he's going home. And then that would be it. But so every day I had pressure. Every day I felt stressed. And at no point was I confident that I had it. But every night at that deliberation table, I was never worried. Every time we got kicked out of the kitchen, I know I look sad, but in my mind, I'm like, wasn't me. I mean, Gordon be like yelling at us, and I was like, yes.
That sucks for for you guys that fucked up over there.
It ain't me. I'm not the one going on.
Oh, my God.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it was wild.
How much of... Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. I don't know if you're allowed to answer or answer honestly. I don't know. When people are getting sent home, how much of that is genuinely organic and how much of that is producers saying, here's what needs to get done. Here's who we want to keep. Here's who we want to leave.
All of it is organic.
Truly.
Nobody knows who's going home. It's 100% Gordon's decision. Hmm. Nobody knows who's going to win until the door opens.
Oh, that is really cool. And I think that it doesn't feel like it's manufactured by producers to me, yeah, like some other shows. Like Brandon and I have talked about The Bachelor a lot. I mean, I feel like so much of that is obviously scripted, the producers, yeah, right?
But well, Arnold Mint said that. Arnold Mint, you know, are you familiar with Arnold? Mm-mm. Arnold was on the Top Shelf, and he was on Food Network Star. And he goes, one thing I recognize, because we all have our own producers, he goes, when you sit down to do those, everybody had a notebook. There's a notebook for every single cast member, so yeah, to speak. And some of them were very small and some of them were very big. The people with very small notebooks weren't around very long. Right. And the people with the big notebooks made it to the end.
Yep.
He's like, so,
but I also think
starting off, they knew what's going on.
Whether it's like scripted or manufactured by producers or not, I think that anybody, especially somebody who works in production in this type of show, has a good sense from day one of like, who's going to last here and who's probably not going to cut it. And I'll say, honestly, I watched the first episode of your season and instantly I said, he's going to win. I knew it. I think I'm on record saying it on this podcast.
I think I am too. We followed you on the show. We talked about the show. We kind of followed it. And I said, Alex cannot tell me what happens.
What? You're not allowed either way.
But he's going to win. And he never did. You never did. But I came on here and I was like, there's no way he loses. I mean, there's no.
Well, and I think with a show like Hell's Kitchen, especially too, compared to some other cooking shows, I think they get a lot of really good, talented people who actually have worked in restaurants and know how to cook. But then there's always some people thrown in there that they're like,
oh, 100%.
I have a home catering business. I'm like, yeah. What?
I'm a chef for the Playboy Mansion.
Or like, I just have never cooked before. What are you doing?
Video and you guys go.
Oh, okay. Or just like, you can tell that somebody has just never cooked professionally before or been in a working kitchen, you know.
Yeah, and we had a few personal chefs. Daphne is a great example. She's worked in restaurants. She's been a sous chef at a restaurant, but now she's a private chef, mm-hmm, in Malibu. And it's working on the line with that timing is so different. It's
totally
incredibly different to have a team, a brigade. You're timing it with the meat station, with garnish, with apps, with Gordon. It's a totally different pace. It's not a catering game. You're not feeding 60 people all at once. You're pushing table by table.
Yeah.
And Gordon's like, on order, two couples, table, blah, 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 how long? And you're like, first of all, you go, what did he just say? And then when he goes back to the other kitchen, you send someone up to the rail to read the ticket because no one understood what he said. And they're like, okay, it's two risotto, there's so much pressure. You don't want to screw up.
Yeah.
But you do a lot.
Wow. I all this is so fascinating. Thank you for
it's a strange world. I mean, just the waiting part. And then every week when it airs, you have to play stupid, you know, who's going to go home this week?
Oh yeah, I could tell. I mean, I could tell when you're posting all this stuff, you're promoting a show, you for know sure what's going to happen. Yeah. I mean, like, you
got a Dropbox full of folders, full of promos. And
is that part of your contract that you have to like post on your social media and all of that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we want people to tune in. We want people to, it's crazy throughout the whole competition, minimal Instagram traction. Right. Mm-hmm. But the second the finale aired the next day, 20,000 followers on Instagram, 2,000 DMs.
Whoa.
I spent 12 hours on Friday just responding to Instagram, Facebook, and text messages. I was in my underwear all day long, in bed, just Like, comment. Thank you so much. Like, comment. Thank you so much.
That's very nice of you to respond.
It was so insane.
I think it really gives people a thrill. I was recently DM'd by one of my favorite reality stars. And
nice.
I got quite a thrill. So it's nice of you to do that.
Well, even the producers were like, listen, when you there are some real super fans of Hell's Kitchen. And so when you engage, when you like their comment, when you respond to them, it can legitimately make their day.
Truly.
And I know, like, I'm a fan of things. I'm a fan of people. I love bands. I love music. I love a lot of things. And so when you get a response from someone that you have followed for a long time, their career has taken off, they acknowledge that you said thank you, you're like, oh, look at that. A little dopamine burst right there. Mm-hmm.
Poof, hell yeah.
Firework. It's nice. And then you do your best to not push that too far, though, because the second I like a comment, that will open the floodgates to them being like, oh, you're on right now. So hey, how have you been doing? What's been going on? You're like, all right, I don't have time for all that.
I was just saying thank you. Have a great day.
Yeah.
But it is super cool to see there's so much support and there's so much encouragement. And, you know, luckily I haven't seen a lot of hate, but there's obviously some out there, but it's been very fun. And I feel very blessed to be where I am right now.
It's interesting because I listened to our first episode yesterday.
Was that March of 2020?
It was April of 2000. You were the 15th guest on this show.
It was 2020 though, right?
Yeah, it was 2020.
Yeah, I mean, that was when you launched.
We were closed. Oh, today.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier.
3 year. Yesterday was the 3 year anniversary of my first episode. So today is really, yesterday, today is like the 3 year anniversary of the pandemic. I mean, because it started, everything closed, I think, on the 13th, 14th. Like when I'm talking closed, MLB, they canceled March Madness, SEC Championship. They canceled.
The world stopped.
Everything. And then restaurants closed, I think, on the 19th was the official mandated. It was 2 days after St. Patrick's Day that you had to close. And it was like, oh, shit. So we started like right now, 3 years ago, you know, I had you on the show in April and you were telling the story of the Facebook video. The
Jesus.
Famous Facebook video where you, I don't want to say you snapped.
It wasn't a
snap, but it was a 6:30 at night. We're dead. I've got all this stuff. And then you get all the emails from your CPA and you're like, how am I going to pay $37,000? I have $42,000 in the account and there's not one person in here. And you made this Facebook video that was very much I'm a small business owner.
It was a plea for help.
I need your help. And then the community responded and showed up to your restaurant. And then the pandemic happened, and that you
the pandemic.
I think one of my favorite comments from that interview was we talked about the month of March, and you go, the month of March was the longest decade of my life.
Yeah.
And I think you've had to pivot a bunch of times throughout then. And
I
then
need to see a chiropractor. I've pivoted so much.
Yeah, you go on Hell's Kitchen, and then you get back. Like, what is this? What has the last couple of years been like for you? I mean, what is this? Just the idea of going on a show, doing what you love to do. Yep. I'm there. I'm being me. This is it. And then a year later, almost, you get to have this baby. Like, I don't know if we're recording when you said that.
We weren't.
So
it's like a 13-month pregnancy, basically. It's really long, and now I've got this baby, and I'm getting to celebrate it.
When did you stop shooting? That's the question. I mean, so
February the 5th
of 2022.
Okay, so I got back on the 6th, and then on the 7th, I was taking a shower and getting ready to take my boys to school. It was Monday, and you know, the whole year so far, I had been in LA Burbank shooting this show, and February the 7th, I was taking a shower, getting ready to take my boys to school, and I opened the curtain, and I looked at my wife, and I was like, this is real, right? All that shit just happened, because she was at the finale. My mom was there.
Oh, it was a special moment. Your wife, her reaction was amazing.
It was, someone on YouTube said, everybody needs someone like that in their lives. Like, to see someone that raw, that excited when you win, everybody needs someone like that.
Yeah.
And it was super sweet to see that. But it was strange to snap back into reality. And then I didn't know what to do with myself.
Because you can't celebrate it.
No. And the world doesn't know. There's like 200 people inside the restaurant that were at Hell's Kitchen. They know. But you can't talk about it. We couldn't even tell anybody we were on the show until I think the day after Labor Day. That's wow. September, right?
Yeah.
So the day
after, so from February to September, you had to act like nothing, and you just won Hell's Kitchen.
And it's not like you can leverage it into a new job of like, hey, look, I just did this thing, you know, pay me to do something for you.
Yeah, you can't call any companies and be like, hey, I just won Hell's Kitchen. You want to work out a brand deal? It was just like,
hey, Hexclad, let me tell you, you can't even do that.
So here's what's funny. I actually called, when I got back, I actually bought some Hexclad pants. And then, because they were great to work with. And so I was just started making videos on Instagram and TikTok because I was bored. And I was like, I don't know what to do with myself. I'm just going to start trying to grow my brand naturally. That way, when Hell's Kitchen hits, I've got a little bit of a bigger audience to platform off of. And so I started making content with Hexclad Pants. In about April, I just DM'd the president of Hexclad on Instagram. I was like, hey, man, you got time for a phone call? And he was like, Yeah, who are you? I was like, I'm just a guy in Nashville, you know, just love to chat with you. And so he called me on a Sunday. And
can't believe he called you back.
I know, super great. And we had like a 30-minute conversation, and I didn't even tell him I was on the show. He knew. And then they got all the episodes far before I did, and I didn't even tell him I was on the show until the day after Labor Day when we were allowed to announce it. He's like, why didn't you tell me you were on the show? I already knew. I was like, well, I didn't want to violate my NDA or break any trust. And he was like, well, that speaks volumes about who you are.
I would say that's probably a better thing because you're like, that's not what I'm doing. I'm not leveraging that.
I wasn't trying to. And then now we work together. I was just with them at South Beach Food and Wine in Miami.
Yeah. Nice.
We have a really good relationship. Here's how great these guys are. And they're doing pretty well as a company. They've done... I think they did almost $300 million in sales last year. They've only been around for like 5 years. They were in their garage 4 years ago making
boxes.
That's more than we do here at the podcast.
For sure, for sure. So when I was flying to Miami, I left my AirPods in the airplane. And I was like, oh, man, I left my AirPods in the airplane. And I told Cole, who's one of the owners, he came by my hotel like the next morning and was like, hey man, are you here? And I was like, yeah, I'm getting ready to go to the tent. And he said, come outside. I got a gift for you. He himself went to the Apple store, bought a pair of AirPod Pros and just scooted over to my hotel in Miami and gave them to me.
Oh, that's so nice.
Just a nice gesture. Like most people would not do that.
Yeah.
And that was, I don't know, that speaks volumes to me. Just a simple sign of appreciation is, I don't know. It was really sweet. So,
nice.
Yeah.
So
what's going on with your phone?
I don't know, man. My camera's all messed up.
It's busted.
You're sideways.
What is happening?
That's a great question.
I don't know.
For those of you watching, stop watching.
Yeah, no shit.
Just start listening.
Just listen. Nobody watches it anyway. Yeah, but so sometimes I do these shows live on YouTube so that people can watch it, and these are unedited. You know, they're fun. Well,
now I'm just a circle again.
Well.
So, yeah, the last year was weird. The first, you know, 8 months of being back, I didn't know what to do with myself. I drove for Uber a little bit over the summer, which did not make sense for me because I have a monstrous truck. And
how much fun was that?
It really was not.
Really?
No.
I used to love it, man.
So the last guy I picked up, I was so new to Uber that they wouldn't show me where I was going when I picked up a rider, like until they got in my car.
I think that's all Ubers. They're not supposed to know where they're taking
you.
Yeah,
they don't.
Didn't you used to know how far you were going?
No.
There is, once you get
a certain amount of rides.
It's like a status.
Okay.
So you have to earn points. For every ride, you get a point. And if you get within a 3-month span, you get like 600 points.
They'll let you know
then
something.
You're a platinum status as a driver. And you have to keep a rating of 4.7 and above. And you have to have all these different criteria. Then you can be. And then when you get your request, it'll say, this is Sarah. She's 7 minutes away and she's going 72 minutes north, or it'll tell you a direction and how long if you're that diamond status. But it's not over. It's anybody can earn it just over like a 3-month span.
Right.
You have to earn, and then you have to keep that. It's their way of getting drivers to get out and drive.
Got it.
Because if you can just turn an app on whenever you want, maybe you only do 4 rides a day, or you're like, that guy pissed me off, I'm done. They want you to keep going. So there's a whole, to have a good rating and to keep going, there's perks.
Well, there was there's not much Uber business in Murfreesboro. And so, like, at one point, it made me drive. it made me drive 14 miles to pick someone up who only wanted to go 2 miles.
Oh, brother.
Yeah, that's a thing.
And it was like a $6 fare, but it took me 40 minutes to get there and back.
Oh, man.
And so I was like, I don't know about this. And I started coming to Nashville, but the last guy I picked up, the day I said, I'm not doing this anymore, I picked this guy up from the Pep Boys in Antioch. And the second he sits in my truck, he goes, man, my fucking girlfriend just cheated on me. What do you think I should do? And I was like, where are we going? And I looked, and it was like a 90-mile drive. And I was like, oh, my God. And the whole time, he just talked about his girlfriend and the fact that she cheated on him. And I was like,
those are my favorite rides.
I was like, man, maybe y'all should, like, get some counseling or something. I'm not the guy to... I don't know.
I just listen.
And then I dropped him off, and then I had to drive like 45 miles back home, and I was like, I'm never driving for Uber again. And then he didn't tip me.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's a whole thing,
of
too.
Of course.
I tell people, I go, they're like, well, aren't you scared, or what do you think about the driving Uber? And I go, it's just one of those things. It's like they say everybody should wait tables one time in their life to understand that. Like, I feel like it's one of those things. Like, you should go drive Uber. To have your car, which is my car, every person that's ever been in my car, I have willingly invited into my car.
Yeah.
I know you. I trust you. We're going somewhere together. You're in my car. The second that somebody gets in your car that you don't know and they're in your car, the dynamic is crazy.
There's some tension.
I don't know if it's tension, but I remember picking up, picking up like three women outside of, like the W, right? Or maybe it was not the Thompson. Mm-hmm. Thompson. You pick up 3 months out of the Thompson. They're having a conversation outside. And then they get into your car and continue that conversation. And it's like, you're still in the car. This is my car.
Oh, yeah. I've had some salacious conversations.
And then you let three people into the car. And then they continue the conversation as if you're not in the car. Is a crazy experience. Because every person who's ever been in your car up until that point, you're in the conversation because they're in your car for a reason.
Yeah, they're like a friend.
They're like a friend. Now these people are just, and you know what this fucking guy did last night? He did this. And you're just like, and I love to throw in timely comments just to let people know that I'm a human being in a car with you. Like, yeah, I'd have left him too. I'm like, oh shit, he's listening. I'm like, I'm right fucking here.
Yeah, there's no plexiglass device. There's no soundproofing between us.
I'm in the car. I can hear everything you're saying, and I'm a human being. It's a fun.
See, I feel like I always get the Uber driver. I'm like the person who just wants to sit silently, look at my phone, like be a nice passenger. I always get the driver who's like, the door isn't even shut yet, and they're like, so how about that Democratic city council? I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, we're jumping straight into politics.
Yeah, I'm like,
hey, how are you?
No, not, like, the door is still like, and they're like, so who'd you vote for?
Oh, God. God, okay. Next.
What do you think about Trump?
It's
I'm canceling this ride. That's what I think about it.
They get in the car like, thank God they stopped those damn drag shows. You're like, okay,
yeah,
let's go.
Yeah,
legit. There's some really hot button issues right now.
Here's my Uber trick, though, is I've quit. This is so bougie, but it works. I have quit calling a regular Uber ever.
Oh,
always go for the Uber, like the
XL.
The XL.
We're both like, XL. Oh, yeah, the XL.
It's a few dollars more expensive, worth every penny. It's a nice car that's clean. It's usually kind of like a little bit of an older guy, professional driver vibes. He doesn't want to talk to you. The car is nice. There's like NPR or jazz. It's just...
A little water bottle back there.
I can send the third row if I need to.
There's always been like a bottle. He's like, hey man, you want that water? I'm like, man, how much fentanyl did you put in there?
Legit. Oh, I'll never take the water.
Not drinking your water.
But I always get, I'll get in like, I'll call it to pick me up and I'll get in like a Suburban and the driver's
it's
like,
it's just you.
That's what he said. He goes, is it just you? I'm like, it's just me.
I like when it says,
it's a little bit of a flex there. I like that.
Conversation, no, yes, minimal.
How do I get that option?
That's an option on Uber.
It
or,
is.
Or
you
Lyft.
Can do that.
I mean,
now.
You need to update my app.
You can set the temperature setting for the car. How do you like it? Cool, warm, or neutral? Or do you like conversation? It's like no and cold.
No.
Do you know?
No conversation.
I like never take Ubers anymore, ever.
I mean, I don't.
I quit drinking.
Well, I was going to say, you quit drinking.
Yeah,
like, I'll just drive. Like, I don't.
I'm only taking them because I'm in LA all the time and they're so expensive.
Oh, they're so expensive in any city that's not Nashville. Like when I go to Chicago, it's double the price. It's
terrible.
It's crazy.
Okay.
And the drivers in LA also do not know how to work a gas pedal. It's just this.
Oh, God.
I was in the back seat like, huh, I'm about to lose my lunch.
Speaking of LA, sorry, I'm going to jump off Uber chat for a second. I was going to say, like Nashville Uber radio. You said...
Jesus, your phone, man.
Brandon.
We're done. We're done with the phone. You can't see Alex anymore, but you can hear him.
You said something about filming in Burbank. Is it not filmed in Vegas?
No.
I thought that like the set of the restaurant was in Vegas.
Mm-mm. So the set is wherever they want it. We use an old IKEA that they built out. So here's what's crazy. 2 days after, so they filmed our season and then they took a week off and then they filmed season 22. So they got two seasons back to back. 2-3 days after filming was done, the whole thing was just an empty warehouse again. Mm. The kitchen equipment was gone. The dorms were turned like everything was just gone.
That's wild.
And so when I went to LA the first time to do a pop-up, I went to the gym that was close by, and I didn't know where it was because I just got an Uber. And it was across the street from where we filmed. And I was like, that's crazy. That was Hell's Kitchen. And now it's just a set mm-hmm. that they turn into whatever now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
It doesn't look like you would think it would look. It's just on a main road across from Planet Fitness and In-N-Out and a Barnes & Noble.
Hmm.
Okay, so I got to ask about the prize. And you're going to hear all about it right after these words from our sponsors. Hey guys, we are supported by Charpier's Bakery, and we've been supported by Charpier's Bakery for the last year, and I tell you, I couldn't be more proud of this partnership. Guys, they're a locally owned and operated bakery right here in Nashville for the last 36 years. Yes, they deliver fresh baked bread daily to your restaurant's back door, and man, is it good. You want to know what kind of bread they make? Go check them out at charpiersbakery.com. That's C-H-A-R-P-I-E-R-S bakery.com. So they have over 200 types of bread. And if you're wondering, well, hey, look, it's a special recipe that I like to use that, you know, we bake it in our house and it's a kind of a pain, but we like to do it. They can take your recipe and make that bread for you without any of the hassle, the mess, the labor. They'll just deliver right to your door every single day. It is freshly baked. They love to give you a tour of their facility. Give Erin Mosso a call. Her number is 615-319-6453. You should do it now. Do you provide your team with health insurance? If you work for a restaurant right now that doesn't offer health insurance, do you need health insurance? Because Dan Marr over at Southern Health Insurance wants to change that. If you're a local restaurant and you really want to offer health insurance, there are so many benefits. Improved employee retention, you have happier team members, which means longer tenures and less training time. Smoother shifts make everyone's lives easier, meaning happier employees are more likely to stick around. When employees take care of their health, they're less likely to take sick days. This means reduction in lost productivity and revenue for your business. Fewer sick days, wouldn't that be great? You have improved morale. A healthy workplace with opportunities for growth is a happy workplace. Encouraging your team's well-being will result in higher morale and better work performance. Guys, all of these things, Dan offers health insurance. He offers visual insurance and dental, as well as life insurance. And guys, if you're out there and the marketplace is just too tough to navigate, Dan can answer any question that you may have. Any business, if you're a small business, it doesn't have to be a restaurant. You need to call Southern Health Insurance, 832-816-8602. If you prefer to email, you can email dan@southernhealthins.com. We are supported by Robbins Insurance. Offering protection you can trust, Robbins Insurance is an independent insurance agency known across the Southeast for their customized insurance policies, sound guidance, and attentive service. They're also known here at Nashville Restaurant Radio for protecting some of Music City's best restaurants. Look, when it comes to insuring your restaurant or bar, you don't want to leave the job to some strip mall insurance agency with no background in hospitality and expertise in the local market. You need someone who knows the industry, who understands your business, who will create a policy that protects your physical space and protects you and your staff too. Y'all, Matthew Clements is that guy. He's the agent at Robbins Insurance for the hospitality industry. With extensive industry experience himself, Matthew has the knowledge to create a policy that'll protect you and your business no matter what comes your way. Visit Robbins' website at robbinsins.com. That's robbinsins.com to get in touch with him or reach out to Matthew directly at 863-409-9372. Protection you can trust. That's Robbins.
Yeah.
And I want to get back to, and you, I think you were leading a question, but I
legitimately have 100 questions that okay, I can just we can rapid keep going fire.
Yes.
But no. I don't want to take up too much of your time or get off track. Because the questions I have are things like just very specific reality TV filming questions.
Okay, yeah. Let's I want to definitely get to those. But I think we got off topic because you had this baby, so to speak, is the baby metaphorically. In February of 2022,
yep.
When did the show first air? After Labor Day, in September?
September 27th or the 29th.
Okay, so from February to September, you're in no man's land.
Yep.
You're driving Uber, you're hanging out, and then...
making content, doing some odd jobs.
We reached out to Hexclad, and hey, now we're starting this partnership. The show starts.
Yep.
And now people are reaching out. Hey, man, congratulations. That's awesome. You're promoting it.
Yep.
It builds.
Yep.
The day that... What is your mindset leading up to it? Because you know what's going to happen and you know the day after what's going to happen. Do you have like the next 6 months planned out?
No, I mean, no. It's like looking at the moon from here and then standing on the moon. You can't really understand what it's going to feel like to stand on the moon until you're standing on the moon. I didn't know what the day after the finale would look like. I didn't think I'd be in my underwear responding to DMs for 12 hours, but I was.
What's it like when you go to Kroger in Murfreesboro?
Nothing is fast anymore. So I called, I placed an order please, if anybody's listening to this, I'm not complaining about this. I'm just simply stating a fact.
Sure.
I love it when people come up to me and say, loved you on the show. It was so fun to watch. It's great. But I went to Oscar's Tacos to pick up a to-go order that I placed that was ready for pickup for my family, and it took me 45 minutes to get home.
Wow.
Because there were like four different families there that wanted to talk. And it's just part of it. Went to Home Depot the other day to get a butane torch. I was there for an hour.
Holy cow.
Does that happen? That's the thing. I think you're like, I want to be a celebrity, or people want to be famous and they want all this stuff. And it's like, how in real time for you, do you see this getting really old real soon? Or are you like leaning into it? Do you love it? Like,
it's a little bit of both. I mean, when you have like, when you're on a time crunch, it's you want to be kind, and like I genuinely want to be kind and nice to everyone, but sometimes you just don't have time for a conversation, and that can come off very rude if you're like being short with someone. Like I was at the gym this morning, a guy that I know was trying to talk to me, but I only had 30 or 45 minutes to get there, then to get home and shower so I could be here on time. Mm-hmm. And I would have loved to talk to him for longer, but I was like, he was talking, I was like slowly putting my AirPod back in, I started to walk away. And it's like, I want to talk to you, but I have things
wanna
to do.
Schedule.
I have things to do as well. So, I mean, I can see, and again, I'm like an F-list celebrity here. It's like way down the totem pole.
But it's fresh.
It's very new.
Just have everybody seen you all over social media, but like still... I mean, you freaking won Hell's Kitchen. It's a big deal, man.
Yeah, I don't think it's as big as it is in a lot of ways. Like, and there's a little bit of imposter syndrome,
I'm sure,
that's built up with this. And that's, I've talked to my wife about this probably too much, but I've been trying to do something like this since I was like 18 years old. I was a musician. I've been a musician my whole life. I was in bands. I was trying to get on food shows. I've been on the Food Network. I shot another pilot for the Food Network. I've tried to get, I almost got a record label. Like we were in a studio in 2010 cutting an album. All these things have almost happened in my life. And now I'm 41 and something finally hits. And I'm like, this came out of nowhere. It's like, I don't deserve it.
But the break you've been trying to catch.
Doesn't seem, yeah, but my life has been compounded with so many almosts that it's like when it finally hits, it's like, when's it going to be taken away?
Mm-hmm.
How long is it going to last?
Mm-hmm. That's like buying lottery tickets your whole life and winning little bits in here, but then you hitting the jackpot and you're like, holy shit. Like
the next day you have a stroke.
Well, like what do you, hey, look, I've got $200 million now. What do I do? That I've been playing lottery for so long, but like I don't need to play lottery right. anymore because I won.
I guess I keep playing.
What's the next thing I do?
Now I buy $200 million worth of lottery tickets.
Yeah. I mean, so you win the show and you get to now, congratulations, you get to be the executive chef at Hell's Kitchen. Drumroll, Atlantic City.
Yeah.
Do you win a cat? Do you get paid to be on the show? Is there like a cash amount that you get paid to be there? Did you win like a prize at the end? Like,
so there's a, I mean, when you're there filming, you get a per diem. It's very minimal. It's like $75 a day just to kind of help
pay. What are you going to do with all that money?
Pay the bills. Well, that,
buy lottery tickets.
That gets paid while you're there to kind of help offset the fact that you don't, you're not at your job getting paid. So when you win, you know, there's a lot of articles out there that said, I just won $250,000.
I saw that. What is like, did you win 250 grand?
No, that's not accurate. So
237?
No. This could be a long story, but there is a cash prize for winning, and it's $150,000. Now, after taxes, that's like $110,000. I have not gotten that yet. I do not know when I'm going to get that. The other $100,000 is your salary if and when you take the job. So, and that's divided into 12 months, obviously. I made an arrangement with Caesars to take the job on a part-time basis. I could not. Logistically, there's just so many moving parts when you're, I have an ecosystem. I have a wife that works from home, and I have these two boys that are in a great school system. And I could not imagine just selling my home just to move to Atlantic City for 1 year. It just didn't make sense. So I will be there. Next week is my first weekend there.
Have you been to Atlantic City yet?
I've never been to Atlantic City. I have seen it from, where I've seen New Jersey from New York before.
We'll talk.
But a lot of people have told me it's not the best.
It's not a nice town. I hate to say it, but it's just not.
That's what I've been told.
If you like to gamble, if you like a casino environment, it is a lot of fun. Right. I've had a ton of fun there, but it is not a nice place. I could imagine you living in Murfreesboro with two children.
Culture shock.
Would want to live necessarily.
But also, yeah. It doesn't make sense. Like if I'm watching this before I know a thing, I look at just my own logic in my brain. And I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this. Dude is he's a guy who's got a lot of talent. He now has fame that goes along with this. He's very marketable. He's an attractive guy. He can do all these things.
What's your Venmo?
We're going to go, well, it's like, now I'm going to move to Atlantic City to try and run a restaurant. Like, your opportunities are way more than going to be the executive chef at Hell's Kitchen Atlantic City. Moving yeah. your family, going to do it to work in a kitchen. I feel like you're now marketable. Like, go be a face for a brand and go do other things that aren't 75 hours in a kitchen.
Yeah, I will say, though, like, I guess part of my downfall in life is that I always want to learn. I mean, I'm 41 and I still go stage in restaurants and I'll do it for free just so I can learn. I want to absorb knowledge from everybody. Everybody can teach me something. There's more ways to make pizza. There's more ways to make pasta. There's more ways to butcher a chicken. There's always a new way to do things. And the amount of knowledge that you can come away with from putting yourself in a new environment and gaining new perspectives, to me, that's just immeasurable. And I want to do that. And so for me to be able to stay in Gordon's ecosystem, there's a lot of knowledge that comes with that.
I think it's got to be a cool experience, too, to work in something that I have to assume is such a well-oiled machine as a casino restaurant.
600 covers a night.
I mean, that's got to be an invaluable learning experience to be able to see operations from that level.
That's part of my reasoning for being there. I've never seen anything done on such a massive scale.
Yeah.
400 to 600 covers a night is wild. That's a lot of beef Wellingtons.
Yeah, it is.
And so to be able to be in that environment and to learn, but to also, it's more exposure for me. It's better exposure for the restaurant. When I posted on my Instagram story that I was going to be there this one weekend, they got hundreds of reservations booked for that weekend just that day.
Mm.
And there's people messaging me. There's people from Murfreesboro and Nashville flying to Atlantic City Aww. Next weekend to eat in Hell's Kitchen because I'm going to be there.
That's so cool.
Feels very surreal because I look in the mirror and
that's
I'm
a lot
like,
of pressure.
I'm not running that restaurant. That restaurant has a phenomenal chef. They've got a great brigade. They have a great food and beverage director. It is a machine that's running. I'm like a piece of dry aged beef that's just going to be standing there in the dining room like, hey, nice
well,
to
Well, that's
see
what that's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah. Like, what did the chef the chef there think? How long has he been the chef there? If I'm the chef there, they do a show and they go, okay, so it's brand new.
It's brand new, and they're crushing it, though. Like, Caesar's has been renovated. It's beautiful there. Hell's Kitchen is brand new. It's beautiful inside there. So I can't speak to the city itself, but I know that that property is gorgeous
all
and
of the casinos, all of the casinos in Atlantic City are very, very nice. They are Vegas-style casinos. The gaming floors are great and huge, and there's nice restaurants and all of that. It's just the whole kind of
city vibe
scene. It's a casino town. It's like when you go to Biloxi, you know, there's some nice stuff. The Biloxi, I don't know, it's kind of shitty.
It's like Tunica.
Yeah.
What's in Tunica?
Yeah. Well, listen, it's better than Tunica. Atlantic City's better than Tunica.
Well, that's the only, I've only been to Tunica, and I have such a bad history with gambling in that I've done it once and I lost $700 in 45 minutes that I don't ever want to gamble again. And I'm definitely not going to put my six-year-old on a craps table because he's going to be a dead gum. Snake eyes. He'll be an addict. And I'm
if he can roll snake eyes all the time, he could be a lucrative addict.
You should see him bowl. He's six and he bowled a 156 last time we went bowling.
Wow. Damn.
Six.
That's impressive.
Yeah, wow. Blind as a bat. Bowls him right down the middle.
That's hilarious.
Don't even look. Just, meh.
Oh, my God.
He's crazy.
So you're going to be going there monthly?
Yeah. So
I'm setting a couple days?
I'm setting the rest of the year schedule next week when we go. I'll probably do some sort of summer residency for 2 or 3 weeks when I'm there. They want me to do like a tasting menu 1 week. So, you know, 7 to 9 courses, sell it for $200 a head, and then do that for tables of 12. And that'll probably sell out. So we're looking at doing that. And, you know, just to still be involved with, again, Gordon's phenomenal. His team is great. Like, Christina's, I could not say anything negative about them if I tried. So to be able to still be in that bubble in any capacity is great.
That's awesome.
Heard.
And I'll take, you know, I couldn't do it full time because of my family. And again, if my family falls apart, then what does a career matter at all? I'm not going to leave a job at a casino and go to an apartment with no paintings on the wall and no family and just be like, well, this is my life now. That's not worth it. Well, it's not worth it at all.
No.
Your wife's name is Sarah, right?
Sarah Ballou.
Sarah yes. Ballou.
She works from home, unfortunately.
Oh, she's amazing. I've got to spend a little time with her.
She's a sweetheart.
She really is. How is she taking all this? I mean, obviously, there's an excitement for you, but when you, our boys are kind of the same age.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure on her.
I know that if I was to be gone for a month or 2 months or all these trips to LA and Miami and I'm going all over the place, like, I'm still raising two boys over here. Like, how's this transition been for her?
It's not been without its bumps and sacrifices for sure. I mean, she's a champ and our boys, you know, they're 8 and 6. They're crazy. They're crazy. Just like every other 8 and 6 year old. Nothing wrong with them. They're just crazy. And to wrangle that, you know, she's working full time, trying to maintain the house, getting them up, fed to school, projects, homework, you know, trying to go to the gym, exercise and take care of herself. It's a lot. It's, you know, and then I come home and I'm like swooping in like, yay, let's go for a hike. Let's go have fun. And she's like, I'm going to go take a nap. Now that you're home. And, you know, I know it's hard for her. We've had those conversations to prepare. Like, it's going to hit hard.
So you had a year to kind of.
Yeah. But again, like looking at the moon, talking about being gone is not the same as being gone. And so it's hard on her. She's doing a great job, you know, but I know it's exhausting. And I mean, I wouldn't be where I am without her. It's all, she's allowed me to chase my dreams as crazy as they've been. And I wouldn't be here without it. So I'm a very blessed man.
Well, I'd like to give a shout out because there was a moment when you first got to see, when he called you to his office and he said, I've got something for you. He said, turn around and your mom and your wife were there.
Yeah.
And you're sitting on that couch and he goes, how's everything been? Has it been okay? And she has a look. She's like,
she's like,
well, and their mom's like, anyway, let's, there's like this look, and she was like, oh, it's been a challenge.
Yeah, I mean.
And I could, I saw that my wife and I were watching together, and I was like, oh, did you feel that? You felt that little moment she just had, because she's, I'm gone a lot, not yeah. out of town, but like, I do this in the mornings. I'm at the restaurant. I come home at nighttime, and it's like, well, I've had an entire day here without you, and now you're home, or I go to a meeting at nighttime, because I go to these, you know, I don't drink anymore meetings. You know what those right. start to play into? When are you going to be home? Because I'm struggling. And you have to find that balance, and it's just difficult. I felt that in that moment where she was like, no, everything's fine.
Well, Mason's very emotional, and so he had a very hard time while I was gone. When COVID hit, he and I did not know each other at all, because the whole time he had been alive, I had been working 90 hours a week at a restaurant. And then COVID sends me home, and he thinks I'm this 6-foot-tall monster walking through the house, and now we're thick as thieves. And so I go from being home all the time to going to L.A. for 5 weeks, and he basically has a meltdown every single night. He's sleeping in bed with her. It's very hard on him. My oldest, Raya, he's totally fine. He's like, yeah, we ain't gone. Just I'll see you when you get back. But
my youngest is like that too.
Yeah, he's, you know, they've gotten a little bit more used to it now. But Sarah is a gentle pushover, and my children are cute. And so they get away with murder. And Mason's like, my belly hurts. Can I sleep in your bed tonight? And she goes, all right. And then he sleeps like a tornado, so she gets no sleep, but he sleeps like a champ. She wakes up exhausted. He's like, all right, what's for breakfast? She's like, oh, I don't know.
So, and that's it. That's it. The moment I get the text message from my wife, by the way, when you come home, William's in our bed, or William's in the room. And I'm like, why that? His tummy hurt. Yep. It's like the same sort of a deal. And it's like, okay.
A mother's love, man. You can't replace it, but it's, you know, she's a champ. And our house is running on 8 cylinders because of her, not because of me.
All right, Caroline, this is your time.
Oh, my
reality
God.
Reality show, Caroline.
Oh, my God. I just have, like, so many random questions. Okay, here's my first question.
Okay.
Are you on Cameo?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Oh, you got to do that. You make a bunch of money.
I am not kidding when I say to you right now, I am about to change your life.
Okay.
Hey. I am not kidding.
Okay.
You're going to call me or text me in a couple weeks, and you're going to tell me
10%
that I have changed your life. I'm not kidding.
What is Cameo? Oh, that's the thing where you like send birthday messages to people.
Yes, they can hire you to do that.
Okay.
We need to end this podcast right now so you can go get on Cameo because your income is about to.
Well currently right, I have none, so I'll take any income.
We'll talk.
Heard that. Okay.
Next. Oh God. Okay. Now I'm put on the spot. I had so many questions and now I'm blanking.
Reality show questions. General questions about the reality show. You said I've got so many questions I want to ask about reality shows in general.
I did, and now I got distracted and now I'm blanking. Now she's was the hardest thing for you about being on the show? What was the thing that you were just like, oh my God, I can't fucking take this anymore. Like, I'm ready for this to be over.
We didn't have air conditioning in our dorms.
Why?
I don't know. It was broken or they couldn't find the remotes or something. Oh, they found it when it got down to me, Daphne, and Alejandro, the top three. We walked into the dorms and there were the remote controls for the air conditioning. And we like immediately turned down to 60 degrees. I was like, I'd rather freeze to death because it was LA. It was like 85 degrees in the dorm. And I'm a very regimented person. I sleep with blackout curtains, a sound machine, and our house is 65 degrees.
Oh, that's how I am too. We have this joke about don't let me wake up hot.
Yeah.
And I have to have a blindfold, silence, the like whole thing. All of these conditions.
Yeah, and that was the opposite of Hell's Kitchen. All of the lights stay on pretty much all night long. And you're like set lights, not just regular lights, bright ass sun style lights. And then CPAP machines, different people snoring, a twin size bed that was very uncomfortable. And then it was hot.
Oh.
And it was like, I just could never fall asleep. I was taking melatonin, nothing.
Misery.
That was one of the hard parts for me, was the sleep.
Oh, God. Okay, what was my next? I did have another question. Oh, how much coaching did you have to get to pretend like you were excited when someone came in the restaurant that I'm assuming you have no idea who it is? Like, hey, this is Joe Schmo and he has 40 million followers on TikTok. And you had to be like, wow, I can't believe Joe's dining here tonight.
We didn't get any. We got no coaching for that. Okay. Like we were.
Could you just be like, I don't know who the fuck that is.
Yeah. I mean, I would be like, all right. 40. Yeah. Who? Who? Yeah, they said someone, some TikTok star was there. Uncle Roger ate there one night.
Who's Uncle Roger?
He's like a TikTok Instagram guy.
Did you know who that was?
Yes, but I didn't actually know he was there.
Oh, okay.
He was like, he's that guy. And then, like, Tia Mowry was there from Tia and Tamara.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
okay.
Sister.
Yeah.
That was cool. But then there were some.
Did you hear Danny Trejo? Did you talk about that yet?
Yeah, Danny was that. Well, okay. Now, Danny was cool.
Danny Trejo's really making the reality show rounds lately. He was just recently on an episode of RuPaul's Drag Race as well. So I don't know what's
going on. He's resurging.
There.
Yeah. He's
back.
He's got a coffee and donut place. He's got Trejo's Tacos in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing the thing, man. He's a super nice guy.
Okay.
Very short.
Love to hear that.
Very short.
Are all the guests from like casting, like all the regular guests?
It's very hard to get to eat at Hell's Kitchen. I think most of them are known by the producers in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can fill out an application to get there, but it's incredibly complicated to get a reservation there.
Interesting. See, that's why I thought it was in Vegas, because I thought it was actually a mix of regular diners who had reservations plus, like, obviously the VIP celebrity area.
I mean, some of them are regular people, but it's really hard to get on that wait list.
Interesting.
Yeah.
As he says, the hardest ticket in town.
It is. I mean, it's, you know.
Hardest reservation in the city.
I'll never forget the one couple that we screwed up and got kicked out of the kitchen, though. It was like their 40th anniversary. They flew over here from England. They waited like 4 months, spent all this money, and then we couldn't cook their steak right.
So are there some people that just don't eat?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
If the kitchen gets kicked out, you leave without being fed. Luckily, there's an In-N-Out across the street.
Oh, my
God. Damn, can you imagine having that reservation? Like, we're going to get to be here for like 6 months, and then all of a sudden it's like, I guess we're not going to eat here.
I mean, instead of dinner and a show, you're getting a show with a possibility of dinner.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it's not, the reason to go is like, I mean, I'm sure the food is great, but it's not like,
experience.
It's not like, oh, the catbird seat, like here's something innovative, and you know what I mean? It's like, it's, you know.
It's not one of Baxter's dishes.
Right, exactly.
It's a risotto, maybe.
Exactly. Maybe.
Have you got to meet Stephanie Eisler, these people that are on the show? I mean, just your circle now. Is there any like buddy's cell phone number that you've got recently that you're just like, holy shit, I have this person's cell phone number?
Yeah, there's a few. I was a big fan of a band called Need to Breathe for a long time. I shot a TV show with Bo Reinhart, who was one of the founding members and guitar players, who's now a solo artist. I did a thing with him.
In my first episode with you, I say, what's your favorite band? I did a rapid fire question, and you said, Need to Breathe. And then you got to cook for them.
Yeah, yeah. The next year, I was doing their Caverns tour.
Yeah.
And then last week, I shot a TV show with Bo. And now I'm doing something with a band called Shinedown. They're pretty big.
Yeah, I've heard of Shinedown. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
I've heard of them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so, they're huge. They sell at the Brinstone Arena. I mean, like, they're...
Yeah, so we talk, and I'm doing something with them very soon.
Wow.
So that's kind of exciting. It's very strange. It's very strange.
So it's interesting because, like, you win the chef thing, and the number you're excited about are bands.
Musicians. Well, I'm musicians. A musician.
Oh, so that's an interesting kind of a...
There's not really a lot of chefs I want to meet. Like, you know, I like regular people. We're all, at the end of the day, we're all just people.
Yeah.
And some of the chefs that I've met, kind of douchey.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little arrogant. I met some people at the South Beach Food and Wine Festival. Nah, I'm good.
Give us some names.
I'd rather just sit in my hotel alone than be in those situations.
Are you
going to tell me when we stop recording?
I'll tell you when we stop recording.
I'll trade you for cameo career advice.
last time you were on the show, I asked you, were one of the first people that I kind of asked like for a final thought. I said, so what do you want to say to the people out there? What's your final thing? I want to play that for you.
Oh, Lord.
Your final thought from...
I don't know what this says. Let's hear it.
April like 17th, 2020. I wonder if it'll play. That's why I was queuing up back there. Let's see if it'll work.
Servers, cooks, y'all just try to hang on. It's the next 2 weeks are supposed to be pretty wild and crazy, but I do believe that this industry will bounce back. It may look different, but I would say take this time to figure out what you want to do and who you want to be and what the kind of place.
I was like, get a phone call. Seriously. Playing this. All right, here we go.
You want to work for. And if you feel like you've not been challenged enough, go find somewhere that's going to challenge you. life is too short to work somewhere that you don't want to be. And so go find where that is. And for the general public, I think we've understood how important restaurants are. And I don't know who said this. I think Gavin Kaysen reposted it. But if the kitchen is the heart of the house, what does that mean restaurants are to the community? I think people are starting to figure out how important restaurants are. And it's not just about eating to live. We're trying to create experiences and moments. And our goal is that when you leave, you're in a better headspace than when you showed up. And we miss taking care of people. We miss seeing people. We miss community. And I think people are starting to realize how important restaurants are. It was not about just going in there and grabbing a quick bite and leaving. We miss interacting. We miss relationships. And it's so much more than just a meal.
I love that you said that.
Okay.
So it's still terrible to hear yourself.
It's the worst.
I think that's not it. But like your take in April, I feel like there's so much in that because there's realness of raw, scared, what's happening right now. People will come back to restaurants. I mean, just this
2 weeks.
Remember, that was the thing. We were all like, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, guys.
And a couple weeks, whatever happens. And it's like
2 weeks.
Here we are. What do you think about what you said there?
I think a lot of people figured out what they wanted to do and what they didn't want to do. I think a lot of people left the industry. And
our previous guest did.
Some of them didn't look back, you know? It was, I don't know. Some people held on. A lot of people pivoted. A lot of people sold businesses. A lot of people got to use COVID as the reason to change, you know? I was miserable, but...
As you should be able to.
Yeah. But I mean, it's hard, you know. A lot of times people think that you owe them something, and you know, you can't close your restaurant. You owe us. It's like I don't owe you anything. I'm not happy, so I don't know. I think.
Did you listen to your own advice there?
Yeah, I challenged myself. I wasn't challenged. I was miserable. June of 2021, I've been doing the meal prep thing for a year, and I was miserable. I was depressed. I came home and I said, there has got to be more to life than this. I can't keep doing this. I'd rather be anywhere.
Why were you miserable?
Because my restaurant was dead. There were no people there. It was me and a lady cooking meal prep. We were doing well in sales, like really well in sales. But I was mass manufacturing macro labeled chicken teriyaki and salmon and sweet potatoes. There was no creativity. There was no team. There were no guests. It was just me in a room alone cooking. The whole point of a restaurant did not exist in that space anymore. It was depressing standing in that dining room, remembering what it looked like when it was full, having the team there. Okay, I relate a really good night of service to being in a band. They're very similar feelings to me. When you're in a band and you're playing on stage and you're playing a show and you're not thinking about the notes you're playing, you're not thinking about the notes you're singing, you're not having to think about the words, and everybody is just humming. The band is on fire. It's a great feeling. You get off stage and you're like, holy shit, that was a good show. It felt great. You're playing with the A team. That's what a good night of service feels like on a Friday night. Everybody in the dining room is happy. They're humming. There's a vibration in the room. You can feel it. The servers are happy, which is rare. The cooks are happy, which is rare. The bartender's happy, which is rare. And everybody's happy. That feeling of tonight, the sales were great. The tips were great. The compliments were great.
Just chasing that all the time.
That was such a great feeling. That had been sucked out of my life. It was gone. And I needed something to massively shake me up. Or I was going to get stuck in a very, very scary place. And Hell's Kitchen happened at the exact right time, and it was the exact right thing to give me that wake-up call. We almost moved to Montana.
Oh, wow.
I was like, we're selling the house. We're going to Bozeman. Like, we're out of here. It's cold weather. Yellowstone's 45 minutes away. It's a 60,000-person community with the food and music scene of Nashville, but it's a smaller, tight-knit community.
John Mayer lives there, doesn't he?
Everybody lives in Montana or Austin, Texas. That's like where the place to go. But I was like, I just need something to change my life. And I got it.
You really got it.
Yeah, you did.
Really got it. And I remember just sitting in the restaurant on a, just like a regular day, and I was on Facebook, and a guy that I went to culinary school posted the Hell's Kitchen application link, and he was like, what the hell, I might apply. And I was like, well, I'm not doing anything. So I clicked it and applied, and 5 minutes later, my phone was ringing.
Wow.
And then 6 months later, I got told I was going to be on the show.
Wow.
What did you have to, what did you have to do to get on the show?
A lot.
A lot.
A lot. Probably 9 hours of Zoom interviews.
Wow.
Different levels of producers. First, it's just like a casting agent, and then bottom level producer to up to like the people that actually created and run the show. And then heart evaluation, EKG, like a 30-page background check, going back to like fifth grade. Who was your best friend in fifth grade? Where did they live? What's their email address? I'm like, you want my fifth grade friend's email address?
Oh, yeah, because they, like, there's so many people now that, like, after the fact, there was a recent winner of Top Chef who basically the day after he won, not last season, but maybe the season before, all these women that used to work for him came out with these allegations about him. And it's just like, wow, it turns out this guy's a real scumbag. So, yeah.
I mean, anything is possible. And so, blood test, alcohol test, drug test, full physical, psychological evaluation. You have a conversation with a psychologist, and then...
And Billy still was on the show.
And then she... You open another screen, she stays on camera, and she watches you take 130 psychological question test.
Wow.
And she's, like, watching to see how you're answering, how your eyes move. And, like, the first question was, like, do you enjoy farting in public? And it's like,
yeah. Sometimes?
Yeah. My kids are there. I'm blaming on them. But it was just, you know, weird.
You enjoy farting in public?
It was just weird. And then just those different, and then I got the phone call, and you'll go weeks without hearing anything.
Yeah.
And you're like, I guess it's not happening. And then you'll wake up on a Monday, there's like 4 emails. Hey, we've got this doctor's appointment scheduled for you tomorrow.
Wow.
And then December 23rd, they called and said, you made the show, you're leaving in 10 days. So wow. I had 10 days to find someone to buy my restaurant.
Holy cow.
Yep.
And you made it happen.
That's been a nightmare.
A kitchen nightmare?
Very much so.
Oh, look at you.
Very much so.
That's going to have to be for the next time. Because I know there's a lot there. I mean, I've known you for a couple years.
Yeah.
And I've known some of the things that are going on with that space. And
yeah, it's been tough. The last year has been, you know, a lot of really not great things happened to me over the last year. I got swindled, but I got into an agreement with some people, and basically all my winnings from Hell's Kitchen are gone.
Legal fees?
Line of credit that I took out based on some promises that were made that never came to fruition.
Oof.
And so $90,000 has to be paid back.
Wow.
To a line
Sorry
of credit.
To hear that.
Yeah. So it's been a rough road. And then wound up suing the guy that bought my restaurant, and he's not open right now. It's a disaster. Like it's been a weird year.
Yeah.
It's covered by a lot of really great things and blessings, and I'm not upset about it, but it's not all been fun and fireworks. There's obviously been things to battle through just like everybody else in life. I'm not alone.
No. I think that's vulnerable talking about that. I mean, you can stand up here and say, I'd like to talk about Hell's Kitchen and my win, and let's talk about all the things that are ahead for me, and let's promote this and let's promote that. I think you've been incredibly vulnerable just talking about all of the different things. So thank you
for
that. I mean,
well, I try to be honest, and I think that's valuable in life. I mean, I've never been one to shy away from that. I think people find reality in that. I'm not hiding from the truth. My life is not perfect just like anybody else's. And when you are able to freely talk about even the shit in your life, it frees other people up to know that they're not alone. And it's
absolutely
it's okay to be depressed. It's not forever, you know. It's that whole saying of trust the process. It's really hard when you're in the process.
Oh, man.
It's really fucking hard. Because
it's
really easy to get bogged down and in the weeds and feel like this is just going to last forever. But it probably won't, but it can really feel like it. It's hard. trusting the process is very easy to say when you've on, when you're on the other side of the process. So I don't know that I can tell people that. Just trust the process. I mean, you just got to keep persevering. It's just really hard.
I mean, that's my not drinking. I mean, that's the, you know, when I first stopped drinking and I went to my first meeting and, you know, I'm like, well, I want to just trust the process. This is what you need to do. Stop talking. Just listen and do, you know, it's like all these different things, which is why I have my.
Your bracelet on?
The bracelet that says listen more, talk less. But it's a matter of, okay, there's people that have done this a long time and they know what it is. So trust the process. And the serenity prayer, you know, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. If I can't change something, if it's out of my control, I'm not going to stress about it. It's not going to ruin my day. That's probably a lot of what you're dealing with, is that there's a lot of shit that's out of your control that you can't change that directly affects you and decisions that you're going to make about what you can change. That's got to be difficult, because at some point you have to accept that and go, okay, well, whatever you got is my plan.
The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck is a great book I would recommend.
I just bought it.
It's a great book because you've only got so many fucks to give in life, and some things just aren't worth giving a fuck about. And you can't lose sleep over that kind of stuff. But, you know, I've had an analogy about running into a brick wall. That's kind of like finding your success or whatever that is. And it really is, it's trust the process is one thing, but it's just, it's moment by moment, day by day. Just keep waking up and putting everything in you've got into it. And every day, you know, I've used the analogy, there's this wall in front of you, and that wall is success or fame or family or whatever that wall is. On the other side of that wall is what you're looking to get. And every day you've got to run full speed, and you've got to slam your face and your whole body into the wall. And it's going to hurt a lot. And every day you do it and you do it and you do it, and you keep smacking your face up against this wall. And then one day there's a little bit of crack. And then the other day there's another little crack. And another day a brick falls out. And then one day the whole wall falls down. You might be mangled and need some Botox and have a few broken bones, but that's
perseverance.
It doesn't come with a light switch.
I really like that analogy a lot.
I do too.
That's a good one.
Thanks.
A good one. Alex, we've kept you here a long time. Thank you for making the trip down from Murfreesboro.
My pleasure.
To talk with us. I'm going to do like we did back in the day. Gordon Food Service is our title sponsor, and they sponsor the Gordon Food Service Final Thought, which is on you. You get to kind of like I just played for you, your final thought from our first interview. You get to now have the, and you don't have to give anything motivational. You can say whatever you want. You can be like, I always say nib high football rules, whatever you want to say.
Trust the process.
All right. And wonderful. Alex Blue, trust the process. The mic is yours, man. Whatever you want to say, as long as you want to say it. You're not on camera anymore, so.
Yeah. Well, that broke a long time ago.
Yeah, it did.
Man, I would just say this life is short and the world is big. Don't feel like you're ever stuck in one place. You've got air and opportunity to do whatever you want. There's always a way to get out of whatever situation you're in. It might not be easy. It might not be fun, but you can do a lot with a little bit of creativity. So
screwed him up right in the middle of his thing, thinking of it. He's like, yeah, and I'm going
to
wrap it up now.
I don't know what to say with my hands.
Alex Blue, thank you so much, man. And I wish you nothing but the best of success and all this newfound fame and enjoyment, and I wish patience and everything for your wife. We're thinking about her too. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
There it is, Alex Ballou. God, that was a fun episode. I'm telling you, it's just fun talking to him. We got done with that episode, and I was like, man, that's why we do this. That is why we do this. Again, thank you, Alex, for joining us in studio. Hopefully we can get an update from him again here real soon. Two final thoughts in the final 10 minutes of that show. Hey, if you're out there and you are, you know, maybe you drink too much, maybe you don't drink too much, maybe you're wondering if you drink too much, there is a place locally you can go. It is called Ben's Friends, and it is, they meet every Monday morning at 11 o'clock, and it is at the Oak Steakhouse. So this is a group of, is for the restaurant industry. It's not AA, but it's a meeting where you can come in and you're not alone. You're with people that care about you, that want to see you succeed. I would love to see you there. 11 o'clock at Oak Steakhouse, Ben's Friends. Go check them out at bensfriendsinternational.com. nashvillesuper.org. I think that's the website. But our good buddy Jamie Pruitt is the co-chair over there, and we'd love to, if you are questioned, you're just curious, you're sober curious any kind of way, if you know you need help, free to come in. We'd love to join the group. It's a great thing to do. So hope you guys are being safe out there. We'll see you again real soon with a new episode of The Roundup coming up this Friday. Love you guys. Bye.